Welcome to another edition of Beyond the Policy. I'm your host, Andrew Correll. I'm joined today by Meg Bowen, Chief Operating Officer and Chief Customer Officer of Refine Labs. Y'all, I'm really excited for this conversation. Churn is a huge risk to a startup. It's not enough to book revenue, but you also must earn it. Churning customers gets in the way of realizing your full potential, but it's also indicative of some deeper issues. In today's episode, we're going to touch on how to determine if you have a churn problem, exercises to better align marketing, sales, and customer success, the three keys to solving customer churn, and finally, some worst-case scenarios when your churn problem goes unchecked. Spoiler alert! You're going out of business. Finally, we wrap up by answering my most burning question. Are breakup songs really just customer churn songs in disguise? You won't want to miss the end of this. After the episode, be sure to check out howyouinsurethat.com to catch up on all of our previous editions. Also, if you've got any questions about any topics we discuss in today's episode, let's go ahead and start a conversation at andrew@howyouinsurethat.com. And now, on to the show. Megan Bowen, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Andrew. It's good to be here.
I'm really excited about our conversation today. I came across this post that you had on LinkedIn about solving customer churn issues. And I knew I just had to invite you on the show to discuss it. Here at the podcast, we're fascinated about risks that face technology startups. And honestly, I gravitate towards things like big events that you read about in the news, whether it's like a data breach or a lawsuit, what have you. And then it hit me, if you're a business and you're churning out customers left and right, how much longer are you going to be in business to begin with, right? I wanted to talk first about what types of experiences that you've had so far in your career that led you to be the voice of the customer.
Absolutely. I definitely grew up in account management and customer success in my career. It's been about 17 years. My first job was at a B2B ed tech startup, and I was an account manager, did that job for 7 years, and on the front lines, really internalized the role and was involved in everything from onboarding and implementation and professional development, as well as retention, upsell, churn mitigation. Then from there, I went to my next several companies and really then had the opportunity to build out and lead those teams. So I built out post-sale at ZocDoc, built out the B2B account management team at Grubhub and Seamless, did the same at Managed by Q. Was really interesting at Managed by Q, though. I started as the director of account management, but then eventually became the chief operating officer. And so once my scope expanded beyond customer success and account management, and I was also overseeing marketing and sales and operations, it really made me appreciate that churn is not just an account management or customer success problem. It's really a company problem. And everyone plays a role in solving for that. And so that was a pivotal moment where I really realized how complex the issue is. A lot of people just blame the CSM if a client churns without even thinking about all of these other potential factors that could be at play. And today, with most SaaS businesses, which are a recurring revenue business model, if you lose customers, it's a huge hit to the financials of the company. And often, I think if you actually just can improve your retention and potentially expansion and upsell of your customer base, that actually could contribute more to your growth than net new customers. And so I think that people are starting to recognize that. A lot of businesses are looking at net revenue retention more closely as a key measure of success, which bakes in churn. And so I think it's starting to get more attention, but it's a complex topic. I've been battling it my entire career. And I think given all of the different contexts that I've been experiencing, it's allowed me to really analyze and hone in on some of the root causes that people need to be thinking about in order to get it under control.
I wanted to unpack a couple of things that you said in there. First was that customer churn is not just a customer success problem. Like, what do you mean by that? What other types of functions within a business can lead to problems in churn?
I think it's a company problem. I think almost every team in the company can impact it in some way. So whatever your product or service is, that has a huge influence and impact on whether customers like it and want to keep using it. Marketing. So are you being not only truthful, but are you being specific and explicit with your messaging? Do people actually really understand what you offer and what they're going to get as a result? What are the promises that you're making in the problems that you're going to solve? Sales. Are you bringing on the right customers? Are you setting the right expectations? So every team plays a role, in my opinion. And I think if you're not thinking about it that way, it could lead you to be too narrow-minded and focused on symptoms of what potentially the real root cause problem is.
And talking about it from a step-by-step process, you had mentioned that when a customer churns, it's off. Oftentimes people look to or point the finger at customer success, but there's many more steps and parts of a customer lifecycle starting from the beginning. Let's take marketing. What are some ways that marketing can address that customer churn problem?
So I think we can tackle it team by team, but I'll constantly bring it back to like looking at it a bit more holistically. And so I think on the marketing side, the key here is marketing needs to be focused on the right target buyer. And so this will come back to the company needing to properly define their ideal customer profile. If you think that everybody will buy your product, you're setting yourself up for failure, right? You need to get really specific about who your target buyer is and what that looks like. And then marketing should really be focused on communicating to that segment of the market. If they're communicating to the wrong people, it's not going to be effective, right? So that's number one. Number two, marketing needs to find an opportunity to meet your buyers where they're at and where they already spend time. It's really easy for marketers to continue to run decade-old plays and try to like reach customers in a way that they do not want to be communicated with today. And so marketing needs to really be thinking about, where do my buyers spend their time and how can I get our content, our message in front of them? And then of course, all the basics, right? Like your positioning, your messaging, your pricing, you have to have all those marketing fundamentals really sorted out. I think that the best thing that a marketer can do is spend as much time as possible with their target customer to really understand their context, their pain points, where they spend their time, and allow those insights to really fuel and direct their marketing strategy. And then I think they need to like let go of a lot of old tactics and really focus on how B2B buyers are buying today.
Got it. And so one of the things that I heard you talk about in there, and correct me if I'm wrong, but this is a exercise of segmentation analysis. Is that correct?
So I think a segmentation analysis, especially if you have 100 plus customers, it's a really good opportunity to try to dig into some of your data to identify some of the trends that it's showing you. And so, for example, I've done this at a few different companies. You want to take your entire customer set and you want to break them up into logical cohorts. And so it can be a little bit different depending on the company, but maybe it's company size, or industry, or company stage. And so you want to try to understand, like, what are some logical segments or that we can group this batch of customers? And then you want to start to look at how those customers are actually using your product. So what is the product usage data? Have they provided any feedback, like a CSAT score, NPS, or qualitative satisfaction feedback? How many times are they calling into the support team for help? How much do they actually pay you, right? Like what's their average contract value? How long do these different groups, what's their retention rate? How long are they staying a customer? All of these different metrics are going to tell you something. What's really fascinating is I've done this a few times, and every single time what happens is a few of those groups, it's really obvious that They're your lowest paying customers. They churn the fastest. They're the most unhappy, right? And you're like, oh, wow. Like, so for these types of companies, like this isn't working, right? For them or for us. And then that will allow you to make a decision to narrow the definition of what your ideal customer profile is. It's really common for an ICP to change over time, right? And so a lot of companies want to go up market and all of these things. It's not necessarily a bad thing, but you need to do it in a really phased approach. And especially if churn is an issue, the best thing you can do is narrow your focus and get all of the customers that are in your ICP sweet spot. And then once you get all of them, then you can start to expand again and start to broaden that definition.
And so for companies that are doing that analysis, it sounds like it will be, data will be more readily available for a company that's had several customers that have been in business for a while. What are some advice for newer companies that maybe don't have that large customer base to draw this data from? Are there any proxies for that data that they maybe can look to optimize for early on? Or is this a process of you just have to do the work and then keep refining that analysis?
I think that there is an opportunity if you're really early and don't have enough data or enough customers to really do this type of analysis. And I think that the play is you need to invest early in your customer success team so that you have enough people to really engage with the handful of customers that you do have, right? I think there's an opportunity to conduct market research with the types of people you want to be your customer, but may not actually be a customer yet. And so I think that the way to really find that out without any historical data is actually going out into the market and speaking to your customers and your prospective customers and really trying to understand where there's a fit or a potential fit for your product. That will allow you to develop some hypotheses on what your ICP is. And then once you conduct that research, then go. Like aim to acquire those customers and know that you'll continue to learn over time and we'll refine it from there.
Once you've identified that ICP sweet spot, whether that's through data of your own or testing hypotheses, how do you go about aligning marketing and sales around that ICP to optimize for that right customer?
Absolutely. And so I think maybe to start with this question is really why do marketing and sales teams not get along, right? Or why are they misaligned?
Yeah, that's a great point. I assume that they would naturally be aligned, but if in reality, if they're not, let's dive into that and like why that might be.
It's pretty typical where there's some tension between the teams. And usually there's a few things that are in place when there is tension. And so it's good to evaluate, are those factors true for me? And can I fix those? And so one is goals and goal setting. Very often marketing will have a goal and sales will have a goal, but they're not really connected. Marketing could hit their goal, but then sales misses their goal. And like, does that make sense? And that happens a lot in companies. And so oftentimes that goal setting process isn't collaborative and you have your marketing team working really hard to hit their goal, the sales team working really hard to hit their goal. And then that's when you're going to have conflict or tension because they're all focused on their own goal, but not actually thinking about what are we trying to do as a cohesive combined team. So I always recommend if you want really true alignment, the marketing and the sales team should be working towards shared revenue goals that they are both accountable to so that they are incentivized to help each other and talk to each other and work together to figure stuff out. Same is true for incentives. So if there's commission or bonus, those need to be aligned to those goals as well so that there's that shared goal and there's no conflict in any of the incentives that exist. I think the other thing that's happened historically is it's so typical for sales to say, well, the leads that marketing gives me are bad. They give me bad leads and I don't want to call them. Like they never actually want to talk to me. They never want to buy anything. Marketing is like, we got all these leads, but they all suck, right? And basically marketing has collected contact information, but none of these people have buying intent. And maybe they're a firmographic fit of what your definition of your ICP is, but they haven't raised their hand saying, I'm interested in talking to a salesperson to buy your product. So this goes back to really making sure that in addition to the shared goals and incentives, that the marketing strategy is really aligned to bring high intent buyers to the sales team. That's when sales is going to love marketing, when they get leads from marketing that are actually interested in talking to them, and that there's a good chance that that will turn into a closed won opportunity. And so I really think those are the key factors with the alignment, goals, incentives, and making sure that marketing is really only sending high intent leads to the sales team to close.
Do you see correlation between high buying intent and reduced customer?
Absolutely. Because typically in today's world, a lot of B2B buyers actually prefer to do a good amount of research on their own, whether it's recommendations from peers or doing their own research online. They take themselves through about 80% of the buying process. And so when they finally come to a salesperson, it's like, I have some questions. I want to better understand pricing. What does implementation look like? But if they're ready to go, they've done their homework, versus a great salesperson being persuasive enough to convince someone to buy something when they weren't sure they even needed it, and then having buyer's remorse after. And so the intent is, if the customer believes that buying your product is going to solve something for them or deliver some value, and they make that decision themselves, they're going to want to stick around until they get that, right? Obviously, you have to be able to deliver on your promises. So that's the next step, and that's important. But absolutely, it's much more correlated with longer retention rates, potentially even better upsell opportunities as well.
That's a perfect segue. Now that we've worked through aligning marketing and sales, why that's beneficial for the company, why tying goals and incentives to a shared goal versus possibly opposing goals. What next? What's the third key to solving customer churn?
So I like to use a phrase called time to value. And so really what that means is, how long does it take after I purchase a product or service for me to get the desired outcome that I want? For me to get the thing, the reason I bought the product, and for me to get that benefit. And the goal should be to get your customer from contract signed to value as quickly as possible. And in any recurring revenue model, that's not just a one-time thing. So you need to get them to time, you need to get them from contract to value ASAP, but then there needs to be recurring value in order to justify the recurring revenue to follow. And so your first vehicle with which to get the customer on the right track to get the benefit as soon as possible is really your onboarding process. And so seller will be talking with a client, they close a deal, they're ready to go. You have a handoff as well as an onboarding process. And this is essentially your most precious time with the customer. It's very typical with most products and services and SaaS business that the customer has to take some action and do some things in order to start to actually leverage the product and get value. And so it's designing that process so that it is an amazing experience for the customer. It's really clear what they need to do and why they need to do it. You're not asking them to do extraneous things that don't matter. And you're really focused on the most important key activities that are going to get them to that time to value. Now, that's going to be different depending on what your product or service is, right? But usually there's some type of technical implementation that has to be completed. There can be some type of training, some type of goal or expectation setting. And so you just have to think through in your particular context. If I had an ideal customer and they did all the things I wanted them to do, what would those things be? And how can I help get them through that process as quickly as possible to hit that time to value milestone?
Without taking into context differences in industry, what are some ways that I could come up with a time to value that makes sense for my business? You said you want to get there as soon as possible. How do I measure that? How do I know if it's taking too long? Because obviously, like, as soon as possible, the shorter the better. But how do you measure, maybe this is taking too long? They're getting to value, but maybe not as quick as I'd like them to. And how do we address that?
So the first thing you have to do is actually identify what the milestone is from the customer's perspective that they like oh yes, like I bought the product to do X, and then 30 days, 60 days, 90 days in, oh, I got X. This is great. This really works. So you have to really define what that is. Too often, a lot of value propositions for products are things like save time, save money, do this better, do this easier, but those are too vague. And so I think the key is really identifying, based on whatever you're selling, what is the core promise that you are delivering? What is the key outcome? So if it is save money, it's saving 30% after 6 months, or right, like get as specific as possible about what those milestones are. And then you want to really be able to build in some type of monitoring system so that you can understand where your customers are in that journey, right? And it can be done using any of the tools that most people have, Salesforce or HubSpot or Gainsight, things like that. And so that's key. And then I think once that's defined, then you can begin to evaluate if your customers are on track to get there. What's always best is if maybe you have a product or service where the benefit does take time, takes 6 months, takes a year. That happens a lot, especially in enterprise products, right? You then need to identify milestones along the way that indicate that you're going in the right direction, and need to communicate that to your customer so that they feel they're making progress, especially on those longer timelines.
Got it. One thing that comes to mind when I'm thinking about this is, what if I'm choosing the right or the wrong metrics? What if I'm choosing the wrong observations, where I have this observation in mind and I observe the behavior or the outcome, but that's really just tricking me into thinking the customer has value? Do you have any like stories or tips for things to stay away from that might trick you into thinking that your customer's realizing value from your product, when in actuality, they may be a candidate for churn?
I would say the most common, especially when you think about a like a SaaS or a product technology company, is someone could be using your product a lot, but not actually be achieving the outcome. And so people are usually surprised, like they log in every day, they're a power user, they use it all the time. And then they're very surprised when they hear that they want to cancel. So if you have some type of technology product, that's, I think, the most common thing that I've experienced, is just because they're using your product a lot doesn't mean it's actually delivering value. And people often will equate those two. If you have a services business, I think the thing to look out for is, like, if you're not getting any real feedback, good or bad, from the client, like if they like, how do you feel like the partnership is going? Everything's fine. That can mean everything is not fine, right? And so it's like, you need to make sure that you give your client a lot of opportunities to share their feedback, whether it's positive or negative, so that you have a real pulse on what's going on. And so like, clients don't like to like deliver bad news or say they're unhappy, right? And a lot of them would rather avoid confrontation than be honest. And so you need to be proactive about soliciting that feedback. And that's another area where I see people get blindsided. Like, they never indicated they were unhappy, I'm so shocked. But it's like, it's your responsibility to understand what their perception is. Sure, we'd all love it if our clients were honest with us 100% of the time, but that's just always not the case.
No, absolutely. I've been thinking a lot about feedback, whether it's pulling it in or giving it, and providing opportunities for like objective, measurable feedback, rather than sometimes open-ended questions are great. But when you ask somebody, hey, how's things going? Like, the easiest way to move on from that question is everything's cool, no worries. But then there's something festering in the background. What are some like experiences you've had with coaxing that out of people who may default to the, oh, everything's fine, everything's fine, but they're like the dog in the meme where the flames are just rising up all around them? How do you get them to open up so that you can maybe address those potential issues before they result in churn?
I have a go-to question for this, which is basically I say, hey, if the, great to hear that things are going well, thanks for the feedback. Really would love to know though, if we could improve one area out of our entire engagement so far, what would that be? And so frame it not as a criticism, but more as soliciting feedback for improvement. And you're essentially inviting them to give you some criticism, right? And I find that if you say, what's the one thing we can improve on, they will almost always give you something specific. And then once you get them talking, you want to make sure you begin to continue to dig in to whatever topic they raise, right? Oh, interesting. Tell me more about that. Or why did that come to mind? Or whatever that is, right? So I think the key is creating an opening for them to give and asking a very specific question so that they respond to it. And then really continuing to dig into whatever that is to learn.
That's a really positive approach to that. Because everyone can think of one thing. And sometimes there is only one thing. Other times that's just the wedge that you can drive to really let out everything that they're feeling. So we've talked about what churn is. We've talked about how the organization can align around servicing a segment of customers that really makes sense for your business. But on the flip side, let's say that a company has a churn problem and they haven't quite addressed it, whether that's because they haven't identified it or they're just not taking the approach to do it. What are some downstream risks that your business face if you've got an uncontrolled churn problem?
If the churn problem is out of control, you likely are unable to replace the number of accounts that churn with new customers. And so essentially, your business is declining. And so it's a pretty major issue. And unfortunately, if you do have a big churn problem, it's very likely that your reputation in the market is going to be impacted. People, unfortunately, it is what it is, but out of 10 people, one person will talk about a great experience and 9 people will talk about a bad experience, right? Like if people have a bad experience, people like to talk about it. They'll take it to social media, they'll tell their friends. And so if you have a major churn issue, not only are you experiencing a real-time decline in revenue, but it probably is like reverberating throughout your market through word of mouth complaints and warnings to not work with your company. That really does not bode well for future success. And I think I think a lot of people historically have really focused on net new customer acquisition, and that's the most important metric. And I'm glad to see that people are shifting more towards net revenue retention, because it's really easy to get caught in the trap of bringing on a bunch of customers that aren't good fits or that eventually churn. And you're not really building a good business if that's the case.
What was the reason, or what were some aha moments that saw that the shift that's starting from net customer acquisition, so basically the delta between customers lost and customers acquired, to that net revenue retention?
I think we still have some more work to do, but what's interesting is like all of the top B2B SaaS companies today, those are the metrics that they're leading with in annual reports, in stakeholder reports, that type of thing. And so I think more and more, especially investors, for example, are more interested in taking a look at that metric. And they recognize the fact that if they're only focused on net new, that doesn't mean that their investment is going to pan out in a positive way. So I think it's the acknowledgement that things got a bit carried away and that we need to recalibrate. I will say it doesn't take away the pressure that investors will put on companies to grow, right? That still exists, but I think both matter. And the reality, like if ultimately you want to exit in some way, IPO, get acquired, in most cases, you have to be profitable.
Yeah.
It's not in all cases, but, and so that metric is truly an indication of building a strong business. It's inclusive of new customers, churn, retention, right? It really tells a bigger part of the story than any of these other individual metrics have in the past.
Oh, that makes perfect sense. I've heard this from time to time, not a lot so much anymore, but from some folks, you know, I'd hear, well, it's don't worry about churn. We can just outgrow that. What would you say to that? I know we've touched a bit on it, but like, what would you tell someone who is like, nah, I'm not going to worry about churn. Our sales staff is bringing on customer after customer, and we'll just outgrow this problem. We'll figure it out later.
It will come. It will bite you at some point. You can't outgrow or outrun it. If you recognize it's a problem and you start to address some of the root causes, you can absolutely course correct and turn it around. But if you think that just acquiring more new customers is the solution to the problem, it's a recipe for disaster. It will work in the short term, but it's not going to work in the long term.
And one thing that I'd seen some talk around is, so churn to a certain degree is unavoidable. Would you recommend companies interview or talk to their customers post-churn? And if so, what would be some benefits of doing that?
I think at the time of churn is your opportunity to really get some good feedback. I think very often companies feel like when a customer cancels, they just want to like stop paying attention to that customer as quickly as possible and move on. What I have done is make sure that the offboarding process is smooth for the customer. You do want to leave them with as good of an impression as possible so that they don't negatively speak about your company. And again, if you're able to ask the right types of questions, you can really learn a lot about why they churned, what their experience was, what led to the decision. And so it may not be possible depending on how many clients a particular company has, but you should be talking with all or most of your clients that are churning and have some type of offboarding process that not only is customer centric and makes it easy for them to stop using your product, but that you use the opportunity to get feedback and that there's some place it can be documented and that you can begin to uncover trends that you can continue to address and improve on.
Awesome. Meg, before we go, I wanted to maybe ask a more lighthearted question or a more fun question. And so I love listening to music. A lot of the times, like in the indie rock space, there's a lot of like songs about love and breakups. Are breakup songs just really customer churn songs masquerading as breakup songs? Because I listen to them and I'm like, this is like two people ending a relationship, but it also sounds like when I go to cancel my like SaaS subscription model or, you know, something like that. Like, is there some connection there or am I just making
that up? That's so funny. Yeah. I love that you bring that up. So I think that you can actually make a lot of really fun parallels between dating and relationships to sales and customer success. And so we could have a little bit of fun with that all day long. And actually there's this song, Somebody I Used to Know, which talks about a breakup basically.
Oh yeah. Uh-huh.
And it's funny because I used to do like churn updates at a meeting and I would play that song as like a lead into it just to, those are always not necessarily the funnest topics that you want, but we would talk about why they churned, what was the feedback, how can we prevent that from happening again? And so I try to infuse a little bit of lightheartedness into the intense conversation by playing that song as a lead up.
That's funny. There's some like, wait, yeah, when churn happens, it's funny how you just have this like deep retrospective moments. Like, what did I do? Was it me? Was it them? What could I do better? So this got me thinking. I was like, okay, so breakup songs are really just songs about churn. Good to know. So this has been an absolutely fantastic, fascinating conversation, Megan. Thanks for stopping by. Where can people go to learn more about your work or just keep up with what you're
doing? I'm the only platform I'm on or social network is LinkedIn. So you can find me there. I'm fairly active posting content. You can also check out my company, refinelabs.com. We help B2B SaaS companies with their demand gen and marketing strategies and have a podcast, although I'm in hiatus and relaunching end of the year. It's called The Unwritten Playbook. And I also co-host The State of Demand Gen with Chris Walker. So those are some places where you can find out and learn more about what I'm working on.
Awesome. And I will double click on the State of Demand Gen. It's the only podcast that is over 45 minutes that I ever listen to. And it's just absolutely fantastic. And you and Chris always have the most interesting and fascinating content. So keep up the good work and thanks for stopping by.
Thanks for having me, Andrew. Take care.
That does it for this episode of Beyond the Policy. If you've missed prior episodes and want to catch up, please visit us at howyouinsurethat.com. Again, that's howyouinsurethat.com. And to never miss an episode in the future, please subscribe to the show at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere you download and listen to shows. Until next time, thanks for joining us and stay risky.